You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Dude, you can't be mad at someone who's burning the flag and also wearing it on your dick.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas. This is the Social Hour. On today's show, host of the Big Talk and Big Feelings podcast, Selena Harrington. And now your host. The way things are going, he wishes AI would just hurry up and take over already. Dees Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. What is up, guys? I am back. Thanks for hanging around for another episode of The Social Hour. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope you guys are hanging in there in these crazy days and times and everything going on out there today. So we appreciate you being here. I've been saying this most of 2025, and it's almost 2026, which is crazy to believe, but trying very hard to get back on this weekly schedule with the show. I've had a lot of travel, a lot of other stuff, so, you know, I just do my best, but I'm glad you're here. When we're here, we're trying to put out episodes as often as we can. Miss a couple weeks, but you know what? Whatever. Take a week off. Don't listen to something. Go take a walk in the woods and tune out for a second. Don't stop consuming shit. There's too much shit to consume. So, anyway, guys, for this week, if you listen to it, the week it comes out, the week of October, or October 8th, Well, look at that. I got a weekend off, guys. I'm going to be home this weekend. I'm going to take a weekend off, and I'm going to relax and recoup because I got another couple busy weeks on the road coming up. Really, I'm just gearing up for Columbus Day on the 13th is my big, you know, that's my biggest holiday. Love colonialism. So, you know, gotta get ready to support that. Or Indigenous Peoples Day, whatever we're calling it, wherever you are. I respect it. Funny story, I used to live in a place called Spokane, Washington, and it's so funny. They had this big, like, controversy. This town was split over whether they should call it Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day. And I want to be clear, I'm totally cool with Indigenous Peoples Day. Columbus sucked. It's fine. Either way, I don't care. It's a day I could give two shits about. But they had this big, like, thing about it, and they finally were, like, felt better. Like, we're going to call it Indigenous Peoples Day, and they really enforced this. And then they also still had a baseball team named the Indians. So I thought that was a weird choice. I'm like, man, you're really not picking consistent with your battles you're picking here, Spokane, Washington. Yeah, and then they had a hockey team called the Chiefs. So you're like, yeah, maybe. Maybe there's some other things you could also work on, city of Spokane. anyway, after next week, things are cranking up, though. On the 16th, we're bringing comedy back to Flower in Flower in San Antonio, Texas. On the 16th, I'll be bringing a couple of my funny friends to that show, so come check out that showcase. And then I will be in Beaumont, Texas, 17th, 18th, 19th at the Beaumont Comic Book Convention. So please come check that out if you're in that area. It's going to be a fun show. And then the Kings of Horror Convention in San Antonio, 24th through 26th. And Houston IndieCon on November 1st and 2nd. And then I will be performing with the Secret Group on November 2nd in Houston. Secret's out. I guess they shouldn't have booked me. I'm shitty at keeping secrets. I'm going to be there, so come check it out. I don't know what the rest of the lineup is. I don't even know where it is yet. I just know I'm going to be there. So anyway, that's the announcement, guys. Go to the website, Dees Comedy. Check out everything going on across the network. Inferno.Earth for all the stuff for Kill, Stay, and the comic book. Number 3 is coming soon. I know I've been saying that, but been getting the last couple pages of art in, and it's looking fantastic. I'm excited to get it in you guys' little hands, and I know you guys are also. We do have some other cool things we're working on for Inferno in 2026, so keep an eye out for some announcements about some growth and potentially some new titles. So that's it. For real, we're going to get into it with our guest today. She comes all the way from not New York. She is in Georgia somewhere. We're going to find out more about that. Please welcome Selena Harrington. Hey, Selena, how you doing?
Hi.
Thank you.
I'm doing good.
Good. Thanks for being here today. How's your morning going? You're in the future. How's the future? Are we still doomed?
Productive.
You know, productive. Okay, that's good. Better than doomed, I suppose. What part of Georgia are you in?
I'm in the CSRA, so near Augusta.
Near Augusta. Oh, okay. The big golf thing in Augusta, right? Okay, cool. Right on. A couple years ago, I went to Georgia for my first time of really spending a lot of time in Georgia. Anyway, I went toured through Georgia doing shows, and I went to Savannah, and man, that place is so much more charming than I ever would have imagined. Like when I think of like a charming southern town, that is like the epitome of what that's like. Oh, this is what I was thinking in my head.
Yeah. Savannah is really beautiful. My husband and I go there pretty often. My husband actually proposed to me on Tybee Island, which is right outside of Savannah.
Okay. Hey, so yeah. Born and raised in Georgia, or?
No, I'm from Texas. So.
Oh. All right.
Yeah, and actually, I was thinking while you were making your announcements, I have a cousin who lives. She doesn't live in Beaumont. She lives in Groves, which is essentially Beaumont. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. And I actually just got home last night from the outskirts of San Antonio. I was visiting friends in Cibolo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Wow. Right on. Yeah. Just that circle. You know what's funny is like I'm always so... It's like astounding to me that certain states are like intrinsically tied to each other. They become somehow like a nexus for each other. And Georgia and Texas have that weird.
They do.
Yeah. I don't know why. And Texas has that with Florida too. But Texas and so like, and I guess, you know, Georgia and Florida right there. But for some reason, those like. There's so much interchange. Like I used to live here. Now I live here. I have so much family there. I don't know what it is.
I've met a lot of people that from New York that live here in Georgia as well. And I always associate the two. You know, when I think of New York, I think of Georgia. So.
Really? Yeah. I think it's probably a lot of people, especially in the last few years, that are kind of fleeing those larger metropolis places and heading inland to smaller charming places, you know.
Well, a lot of it is, you know, they have their 20 and out because they're really big in the union, so they'll live up there and they'll have a whole career for 20 years and then they'll retire, bring all their money down here, and they just get a second career and then live super comfortably
here. Money goes a lot further there than New York, it turns out. You know, it's like go to West Virginia, you can buy a mansion for $130,000. I mean, you have to live in West Virginia then, but you can get a big house. You just got to watch out for the hill folk of West Virginia or whatever. Have you ever seen that documentary? There's a documentary about this like inbred family in West Virginia, the hills of West Virginia.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called like the Hill People of something West Virginia, and like literally they're so inbred that there's one member of the family who just communicates through barking. I mean,
so there was a documentary that I watched about an entire inbred family, but I don't, and this was probably in 2022 or 2023 that I watched it, and this all sounds familiar, but I don't and I know it was on the East Coast, but I don't remember who it was. Was it like some guy that came to find them, like you know just learned about them through the town or whatever, townspeople, and then went in, like, yeah, was it something like that? Then yeah, I think I have, but it was years ago.
Oh man, it's crazy. It's so crazy because, you know, I mean, listen, do what you want to do. I could care less. But it's just so funny, you know, to think about the fact that there's guys in like Silicon Valley creating, you know, like AI sex robots for the next generation. And then there's some dude in West Virginia in overalls just barking at his cousin because he doesn't know how to form sentences. You're like, man, it really, you know, this country does take, it is, it truly is a melting pot. We really have done it, I think. You know, despite our scruples, we've really accomplished what we set out to do.
Oh yeah, definitely.
He's out there fucking trying to tickle the roosters and see what's going on in the morning. You know, he's like, I'm gonna get an egg whether you lay one or not. Let me come here. You know, it's getting weird over there.
Yeah.
So. It's funny. That's America for you, right?
For sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You grew up in Texas. When did you move to Georgia?
I kind of bounced between Louisiana and Georgia from 2019 to 2020. And then I really settled down in late 2020. December, matter of fact.
Sure. Yeah. That's people who choose to go to Louisiana are people who I feel like you're just like running from the law at this point. Like you're like, you're like, listen, the feds are on my trail.
No.
They don't look for people in Louisiana. They figure you're already dead inside if you're in Louisiana. You've metaphorically, you know, ended it all. If you've chosen to live in Louisiana, your life is over whether you like it or not. you know, not to say anything wrong, like I like Louisiana and like there's parts of it.
Yeah.
Like there's things about it I like, but just like the essence of the idea that someone's like, no, this is the place. It just seems like a place you go to escape, you know?
I can honestly say, I think Louisiana people are my favorite kind of people.
Sure.
And I do mean that. I've lived in a lot of different states, but Louisiana, it's just something different. And you can always count on finding good food. I am a foodie.
Ooh,
I love Louisiana. But, I mean, Texas has had my heart because, you know, the whole stereotype, Texans are Texans. But, yeah, I can see that. Like, there's no major – I mean, yeah, you have Shreveport-Bossier, you have New Orleans and Lake Charles, but – all in all, those are still just, they're not like, when you think of metro cities, it's not a metro city.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not, it's not there yet, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I think a lot of it was just so transient for a while too, with like, you know, Bourbon Street, you know, like New Orleans, and then the other cities were just, I mean, part of its economy too. I mean, the state just doesn't have didn't have the money, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I always akin it to like that, like the Everglades area in Florida, and like anyone who moves to Alaska, I'm like, you know, I always said I wanted to go to Alaska and just wear like a yellow windbreaker that says DEA and like walk into any bar in Alaska, you know, and like Ketchikan and be like, hey, you know what? I'm with the DEA I'm looking for, and just watch everyone just shoulder roll out the window and hop onto snowmobiles and go flying into the wilderness. Like, not today.
Oh yeah.
Like,
now Alaska, I can get behind. That's definitely where you go to escape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, that's just fugitive galore.
Right. No one's looking for you in Alaska. So, oh my God. There is something about the South though. Like I grew up in LA and then I moved,
really?
I kind of moved all over. I lived in Montana for a while. I lived in Washington for a while. I lived in Vegas for a while. I lived in Mexico for a while. And now I live in Texas and, you know, spent a lot of time in the South over the last like 10 years doing comedy and then living in Texas. And, you know, they talk about Southern hospitality and that Southern charm, and man, it's fucking real. Like, it's a thing that exists. Like the way people, they say in like California, they say like they say that people in California are like, they're nice but they're not kind, You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like they'll be like, they might smile on your face or like, but they're not like truly involved
in
being like,
in the heart.
Yeah. It's all disingenuous, you know. We're in the South, like people are really, you know, that's why when I moved here a few years ago, people like, oh, Texas, you know, like what they have like this preconceived notion of like what people in Texas would be like. And I'm like, no, everyone's pretty nice. You know, I'm like, I listen, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's bigots and racists and, you know, like that. But that's everywhere. So but for the most part, people are just really like, you do your thing. I'm doing mine. You're cool. Like, I'm nice. If you need help, you know, like very neighborly,
yeah.
Very neighborly.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I would say that's mostly through the South. Let me ask you, do you consider Florida the South?
Florida, you know, Florida to me is like Puerto Rico, you know?
Yeah.
You're like technically you're a part of America, but you know, I think we should get rid of you. So I don't care if you get hurricaned. I'm kidding, Puerto Rico. I keep over Florida. You know, it's like Florida. So, like, geographically speaking, like, if you're talking about the South, I feel like you have to lump Florida in there. But, like, cosmically speaking, it's its own place. It's, you know, that Alabama line to Florida is like a chasm that you're in a different universe, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. I think it's wild when people categorize it as the South or like the Deep South or like the Charming South. I'm like, no.
Georgia's the Deep South.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I have not been to a place here in Georgia where they're not still stuck. Like, any interracial couple that I've met here, one of them is not from here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I found that very interesting because I grew up between Louisiana and Texas. I graduated high school in Texas, went to high school all 4 years in somewhere in Texas. So there, everyone, it's what you, like what you said earlier, a melting pot. And everyone is in an interracial relationship. Mm-hmm. Like in high school, everyone was in an interracial relationship. So to come away from that was... To me, it was so weird.
Well,
like it was.
I will say this as a card carrying Latino, there's just a lot of us, and you know, if you're in Texas, you're either dating someone who's Latino, or you're probably not dating. Like there's. Listen, you don't have a lot of choices. Just you know, I think part of what that is like. In places like Georgia, and I don't even think it's like a necessarily a malicious racial thing. I think it's just that those communities are still very separate. Like there's definitely there's much more like this is a black area, you know. This is a Latino.
Yeah.
This is the white. Like, and I don't know if that's just on purpose or just because of like. I mean, I will say this: it was probably on purpose at some point in the past.
Yeah,
I think it was definitely on purpose. But as time goes, you know, unfortunately, like I think there's still some stereotypes of like. Keeping people separate that are probably perpetuated that aren't true anymore, perpetuated by the media. And it just keeps people like fighting against each other and it keeps people like, we feel more comfortable in this area. So they stay in that area, you know? So you end up, you know, you just, you know, it's like, what are the odds that my soulmate, you know, I went to high school with, it's like, you know, maybe it's just proximity. So I think that's, you know, that's a big part of it where there people are still more in, you know, in their own community as opposed to it blending together as much as other places like in Texas and, you know, California, where I'm from and stuff like that, where you have those communities all kind of just becoming one.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I can definitely see that, especially considering like the kind of area that I live in. you cross I-20 and this just like, you might see a black person, you might.
Yeah.
And
if
know,
so, you call the cops. They're like, we don't stand for this here.
Go back to the other side of I-20. Yeah. Yeah, but, and then like, I didn't do this intentionally, but the town that I live in, you literally pull out of the neighborhood and you go to the left and it's just Latino central. Like there's just, there's like Mexican store after Mexican store, or Latino store, whatever. And you see them walking, you know, all the time. And you go over the tracks and you just have a bunch of retired like military people. So it's kind of just back to that melting pot kind of thing. You know, you just have old military personnel.
Yeah.
And then you take a right and behind us and it's just all white suburban people. Like you might catch a black person who decided to sneak into the neighborhood out there and it's,
yeah,
you know, you can tell they're not wanted.
Right.
They're not wanted.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is what it is, but I really like it out here. I like where we chose, my husband and I, because my husband's white. So I really like where we chose. We didn't go based off anything of that nature. We were really just poor and needed a house because we were tired of renting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cost of rent versus just getting a mortgage, it was just more efficient to get a mortgage, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, and once you get into something, it's easier to get into something better down the road. So it's just getting into something. I mean, especially now, it's like get into something before it's impossible to. That's the real thing. Because, I mean, we're close to, I mean, I talk to anyone younger than me. I mean, I assume you're younger than I am, but you know, people who are not homeowners in their 20s, you know, even people in their 30s, and if they don't own a home yet, I'm like, man, you probably never will. Like that is like that prospect is disappearing so quickly for people, and it's really heartbreaking to see that. You know, we're just barreling down this road of people being perpetual renters, never owning anything, never, you know, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, it definitely is. I agree. I mean, my husband and I were fortunate. We kind of just fell into this place. And I say this to people all the time. We ended up in a townhouse and everyone, like, the people that I've met, when I'll say, "Oh, it's just a little townhouse," they'll tell me, "Oh, well, we started in a townhouse, and then now we have this massive 5-bedroom and 1/2-acre lot." I'm like, "Oh, wow, that's really nice." But like, it's just me and my husband, so we have a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, and we went from I moved into this house in Georgia, renting, and it was like a 5-bedroom, 3-bath, massive house. We always had roommates, and then we downsized to a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and it just always felt so big to me. I hated it so much. So when we came into this house, I was like, I think it has potential, you know? And just the more I thought about it, the more I wanted it. And we went ahead and took the jump, and we had like two other options that we were really, you know, we were liking, but I just always went back to, that is the perfect size for us, you know? And I'm glad that we chose it, because now I'm just so in love. I have a friend who told me, she was like, quit investing in your townhouse. She was like, just leave it as it is, get the colors that you want, and then just leave it alone. And I was like, but I can't, because I truly love my house. Yeah, you know, like, I love my house. But, I mean, that's just me, you know? I feel like we go chasing this dream of, you know, white picket fences and just over luxurious homes, and then we forget, like, it's just us right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you need 5 bedrooms for?
Right.
You know,
right,
and I get that, oh, well, for growing, settle down, enjoy your husband or enjoy your significant other for a little while. You know, like, my husband at first, he was like, okay, we've got the house, we got cars, let's have kids. And I was like, no, dude, like, settle down. I just want to enjoy you and me and our space. You know, like, as soon as we have kids, we're done with sleep. We're done with sleep for a couple years. years, you know?
Yeah, life changes drastically. So, you know, that's why I've given all mine away. So, no, I'm kidding. No kids for me. It does. It makes a huge difference. You know, you want to be able to, enjoy your life a little bit. Do the things you want to do and you kind of slow pace it. No reason to rush.
Yeah, I agree.
So you do, we haven't even talked about what you do yet. You do a lot of different things. You have a podcast called Big Talk, Big Feelings. Big Talk and Big Feelings, not to be confused with Big Talk, Big Feelings. A much lesser podcast. Don't listen to that one. It's shit. It's all Nazi propaganda. So that and makes a difference. Tell us about the podcast, how this started.
Well, I've always, I think like most podcasters, I've always been interested in it. I'm not exaggerating when I say the amount of people in my life that I just casually share like life stories with, and they'll say silly things like, why don't you have a book, or like, why haven't you written a book? Why don't you have your own YouTube channel? Why hasn't someone given you a reality show? And to me, it was always really funny because I'm like, yeah, seriously, like someone needs to be recording this at all times. But I was like, well, you know, I've always been interested in, I really am a big fan of podcasts. And so my husband, I'm a Snapchatter. I've had Snapchat since the year it came out. And I have hours of footage where I'm just recording my adventures. And my husband's like, you just need to start the podcast because all this stuff, like, you could be profiting off of it. You know, you're constantly on the road. You're constantly doing something different. You're constantly starting a new, you know, project. He's like, you just need to profit off of it. And the last few years, especially in the last 10 years, so much has happened to me. I have seen so much. I've been through so much. I've met so many different people, and it was just kind of time, you know. I was like, I really need to get this out. Like, I could write a book, but I'm not there mentally. I think writing always puts me in a really emotional state, and I'm not there mentally. Like, I still have a lot of therapy to get through before I can get to that point. And TikTok just isn't for me. Like, I almost get, like, I get this cringiness when I try and upload TikToks. It's just not for me. So, although I did try it, just I couldn't get behind it. So YouTube was the place to go. And literally this summer, my husband was like, just go get the stuff. Please just go get the stuff. Like, get it. And we were on the road. My husband was working in Indiana. I had painted this room for it. I had a friend who was like, yeah, you need good lighting, you need, you know, an appealing background. He said, you need the sound to be really good. And I was like, oh, I know just the spot. And so I didn't even plan on it so soon. And like I said, I was on the road. So every episode just about has like a different background. And now that we're home, I'm just excited to, you are officially the first podcast that I'm recording in what I plan to be podcast room. So.
Oh, wow. Look at that. We didn't even get to do your show as the first one in there.
No.
This is we're debuting the podcast room of Big Talk and Big Feelings. So, is it like a monologue? You having guests on? What's the different topics? What do you?
It's usually it's a combination. I've done 2 episodes on my own. Mostly I directed them towards siblings, my siblings, and for Suicide Awareness Month. But then also I've had a guest every other episode. And it's just about those, you know, it is like my husband and I have this thing where I say I'm experiencing a lot of big feelings right now, you know, trying to cope, whatever. And that's kind of where the title, part of the title came from. And then just the big talks of, you know, I try not to get into politics. I don't feel like everyone's made for those conversations just because not everyone is capable of, you know, setting their beliefs aside to have a, you know, open conversation.
Right.
But, you know, I've discussed politics here and there, mostly with my husband, because he's very well versed, and, you know, he's very calm about it, and he can, you know, see both sides and stuff. I mean, I've talked about all sorts of things. I've had a few serious conversations about, you know, sexual assault or, just big conversations, big talks. I'd like to get into it more about some of my previous adventures and previous, I guess, life hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's like a vlog. I guess I could say it's just a vlog for entertainment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, any way to get it out there, just talking to people and expressing those things, and, you know, that's it all counts. So, I mean, it sounds brings up one of the things you mentioned, you know, the suicide awareness thing. You mentioned that in your message when we first started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something that really kind of intrigued me, because and, you know, we can get as in depth or as little as you'd like, but that something that's big for me, because you know, in 2020, my best friend, another comic who I'd, you know, known forever, took his own life, and that was it's a crazy thing to process and deal with for people who aren't, you know, never had that experience, hopefully never will. And, you know, still, it's funny, because I was thinking about, I just had this long road trip for comedy this last week, and, you know, it's still to this day, it would have been the type of thing where, you know, he would have been there with me, like, we'd be going together.
Yeah.
And it still really hits in it, you know, it still really is, even after all this time. I mean, yeah, I did therapy for a while, you know, some talk therapy stuff, I've done some other things, and, you know, as much as there's, you know, whatever,
yeah,
acceptance, there's still, like, I realized this last week, and I'm like, I still don't think I've ever fully processed this.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like I've never really let myself fully embrace the emotions that I know are behind it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was kind of crazy in my experience anyway, that, because it was January of 2020 when it happened, and then, for those who don't remember, you know, around March, April of 2020, things got a little crazy for like 5 years. So when that was kind of like, I say cooling off lightly, but, like, you know, I had a couple months of, you know, and then we just rolled right into COVID, and then it was,
right,
like immediate isolation,
right,
which was, like, I think good and bad for me. You know, and, you know, there's probably good things that came out of it. Probably some, I don't know, maybe not bad, maybe nothing bad. Maybe it's all good now that I really think about it. But yeah. And you just, it's one of those things that, you know, even years later, I mean, I don't think it ever really really goes away, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, so I lost my sister first to suicide. She was 17, and that was September 21st of 2017 is when she took her life. And I went through a pretty hard time processing that.
Was she your younger or older sister, Selena?
She was younger. Both siblings were younger than me.
So what was the age difference?
3 years.
Okay, so three. So you were 20. Yeah. She was 17.
I was, okay. Yeah, freshly 20. And oddly enough, my mom had a partner at one point in time when I was 13. He also took his life. So I'd experienced loss to suicide before. And he was like a father figure, but he'd only been in my life, you know, 3 years. Here I am with my sister, though. One,
right,
she's my sister.
Yeah.
Two, she's my younger sister. And three, I've known her entire life. And she was my first sibling. So in a way, it's like I've known her my entire life.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult, you know, like approaching that time of year, and her birthday was August 16th. So I just had, you know, the years following were just this one kind of 30 to maybe 40 day span where I would just get like overwhelmingly gloomy. And like, I just wouldn't sleep at night, and, you know, it was difficult. And, you know, people think that you're going to, it doesn't matter what kind of grief you are processing. I don't think I came to terms and really grieved her until about 2021.
Yeah.
And that was some time later. That was like 4 years later.
Yeah.
You know, and then in 2023, May 5th, my brother, younger brother, took his life, and he was the next oldest of my siblings. So it would have been me, my sister Bertie, and then my brother Noah.
So there was,
and they're both gone.
How big of a difference? Age difference?
7 years.
Okay.
Yep.
And those were your only two siblings?
No, I have more siblings. Okay. My mom, yeah, you know, she loses one, she just pops out another one. So I have three more sisters and a brother.
All younger?
Yep, all younger.
Okay. Again, you know, feel free to tap out any time on with the questions, but just curiosity, you know, was there like a driving force behind them? Were either of them related? You know, was it something that, you know, was the impetus of their actions also something that could have been, you know, affected you in that way, or what? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
So, yeah. I mean, so I guess to start, I definitely struggled with suicidal ideation, and I'd had a couple attempts when I was much younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that anyone suspected it from my sister. I know that my mom, I truly believe that my mom is a driving force behind it. My mom just has this way. And I feel like this opens up for a much bigger, grander topic. But I think my mom, and I hate to say this, but I feel like I just had this conversation recently with a close friend of mine. She has this way of making people feel like they don't want to live. And I hate to say that about a person, but she does. You know, she says the most ugliest, nastiest things to people, and whether they truly apply or not doesn't matter, because she's the mother to these people. She's our mother, and yeah. She says these things, and so I think that in turn turns into our inner monologue.
Yeah, she's, and well, you she know, she's like the final boss Catholic mom. I assume Catholic. I could be wrong, but I'm gonna. Yeah.
She's Mormon.
Well, Mormon. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Mormon, yeah.
Yeah. Did she grow up Catholic?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
My dad was Catholic, but I don't remember my mom ever practicing.
I was gonna say Catholic moms are like, I mean,
weird.
Yeah. My mom, you know, this is not a one for one, but like just for like the mind fuck that when I was a kid, I've always had trouble sleeping. I always had like bad insomnia even when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I would, so like I would wake up in the middle of the night and I'd like go in my mom's room like, mom, I can't sleep, you know? And and her response to that would be like, what's the matter? Do you feel guilty about something? Like, and I'm just like, and I just remember thinking as a kid, like, should I? Did I do something bad? So like, cause you don't, and you're like, oh my God. And so you're like, now I'm swimming. Like, what did I do wrong? You know? And you're
right.
Just, I'm like fucking five and I just can't sleep. And now I'm like worried that I'm thinking about everything I'm doing that's wrong. That could be wrong. Like, what did I do today that was wrong? And now you just think you're bad. And like, you know, it's such a, but, sorry. Anyway.
So your mom basically induced anxiety into you like from an early age.
Yeah.
Like, anxiety to go with your
your inability to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll couple with insomnia really well. So anyway, your mom, her mother, you're saying that you think that her mothering, the way she was basically a parent was a big factor.
Yeah. And I think, so she also, now my sister and my brother, we were raised differently. My mom eventually lost custody of my brother, and I had planned on maybe having these conversations a little bit more in depth on my own, but I think now is a great time to just kind of tap into it a little bit. My sister and I were raised, we weren't allowed to like leave home. Like we weren't allowed to spend the night anywhere. We had family members who tried to interject and intervene and, you know, take us on my mom's hands. And she, like, I say this often that my mom, well, basically was like, these are, she saw us as her objects, like something that she created and we were just hers to like do with, because she would say this stupid fucking thing. She would say, you're my fucking kid, you know,
yeah.
I'll do with you, you know, I'll raise you how I want. I'll do with you what I want. And it was like, she was like, she was God herself. Like everyone that knows my mother knows that she has a God complex. She is God, even though she claims that she's just a follower of Christ. I have a complex relationship with Christianity. I believe that there are good, true Christians out there, but then there's my mom and some people that I've met like her that I will shit on in a heartbeat, you know, but.
Were you raised Mormon?
Yeah, kind of. My mom had us baptized and then she was like really hardcore into it. And then she stepped away from it for several years. And now, like, the year before my sister killed herself, she jumped right back into it really hardcore. And now she's, like, super into it. Like, culty behavior kind of into it.
Yeah.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I would say mostly non-denominational because I went to all sorts of churches growing up, Baptist, what's it called? Like, Pentecostal. I don't even know what other ones there are, but, you know, as well as Mormon. But I grew up in the church a lot. And yeah. So, but my mom had this way of just, like, this possessiveness over us that she didn't teach us how to survive alone. You know, our lifelines were our siblings. She was our lifeline. My mom, it was just a complicated situation where eventually my sister turned 17 and in the state of Texas, you can leave home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what she did. On the night of her 17th birthday, she had a friend come pick her up and she moved out. And a lot of things happened between August 16th to September 21st. But overall, my sister just kind of, I think she just felt alone. I mean, I can't say, right? I'm not her. But I think that she just struggled with, like, feeling maybe abandoned and alone. And she just kind of chug a deuce and did what she did, yeah. You know? With my brother, it was a little bit different. He'd had an attempt, I would say 2018, he had an attempt. And his grandmother, his grandmother, like I said, ended up getting custody. And she tried to keep it hidden from our side of the family, but he confided in me and he told me about it. And of course, I told my mom. And, you know, I kept a very close, watchful eye on him as best as I could. And then as he got a little bit older and, you know, I had more time to spend with him, you know, our closeness got stronger, you know, our relationship was stronger. And he started confiding in me and some of the thoughts and ideations that he experienced. And, you know, my brother was 17 and 18 years old and calling me at 2 and 3 a.m. drunk. And the conversations would somehow always lead back to my sister. So I think that that was a pivotal point for all of us as siblings in our lives. But I think for him, because he struggles with feeling abandoned as well. But he struggled with that because it was like my mom lost custody of him and she just put him on the back burner and she just had another kid. You know, yeah. She was like, oh, well, I'll just replace him with this, you know? And I think he felt that way. And I think I have, as I've gotten older, I kind of see it the same. And this was like a realization where we both kind of felt the same way about my mom. But I saw how it heavily impacted his mental health and his self-worth. A year before he took his life, we had this conversation and I just remember him saying to me, you know, like, when you guys left that last time, I broke down and I never wanted to feel that way again.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad. Like, you can't take that hurt, you know, like I felt hurt because I didn't, you know, I couldn't save my sister. But he felt hurt because he just didn't have us, you know, like he felt like we just forgotten him and moved on. And I think that really impacted me, that I really just wanted to make sure he understood, like, I've always thought about you. I will always think about you and I'll always reach out. And something in me, he came to visit me in 2023, the week after my birthday for a spring break. And something just felt off. You know, something had been feeling off. And, you know, I did have a serious conversation with him. And I remember asking him to stay. And I know that's such a weird thing to, like, have a conversation with someone about, but I did. And, you know, he just said something like, I'll keep that in mind. And I feel like subconsciously I felt like I knew he'd made up his mind. I just didn't know when. Mm-hmm. And then he graduated on May 4th. And that following morning, he'd never spoken to me the way he spoke to me that day. But he was kind of throwing a fit. And words were said, nothing like egregious, nothing like that is life ending by any means, I don't believe. But, you know, he was on the phone with me and he pulled the trigger. And so I rushed over and it was so sudden, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, death in general is usually so sudden. And suicide especially is so sudden, but, like, it just shook me to my core. Like, I explain it as, like, it feels like one second I was sane and, like, the next my sanity just was gone. Like, nothing feels the same. Nothing yeah. is processed the same. You know, you can't call me in the middle of the night without me thinking the worst is about to happen, right. You know? So it's been a journey. It's been a journey. And I don't know. I feel like they are related, but then they're not. It's one of those things where, like, I'm finally starting to, for the longest time, I couldn't look at a picture of my brother. You know, I could look at a picture of my sister and I had pictures of him all over my house, but like, I could not bring my eyes to look at him. And I'm getting to that point now, which, thank God, which means I'm finally processing and truly grieving where I can. And I have to sit down and I have to think on those feelings and process them. But it is so hard.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, are you able to talk about the gamut of emotions that kind of comes with those things, especially, you know, having lived through it twice, you know, maybe the way they were impacted you separately or differently also, because, you know, because, like, I know for me, it was such a, like, they say it's, you know, it's like a cliche thing, but you know, there's still that thought of like oh, like it's the denial stage. Like I'm right. gonna get a message from them. Like they're still, yeah. you know, I'm gonna get that message with some fucking dumb joke in the middle of the night, you know, or there's the feeling of, you know, what could I have done? What did right. I not do? What should, you know, what, you know, like some, that blame of what, you know, and in the end, I want to be clear before we get into this, for anyone listening, there's most likely nothing you can do. I want people to know that, like, you know, not to say just hands off, like, you know, you know, but it's not your fault, you know, like, when someone does that, it's not your fault. So like, don't take that on. Just be everything you can be for someone, you know, while you can. And if that happens, it's not for lack of anything you did or didn't do.
Right. Right.
But
yeah,
sorry. Go ahead.
No. Just, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Sometimes you can't save them. When they make their mind up, they've made their mind up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, with my friend specifically, it was something where, I mean, I mean, I'd taken him to the hospital several times after attempts and stuff. And there was, you know, or him checking himself in, and, you know, it was kind of not a if, but when, and, you know, like there was a certain point where things have been good for so long. You're like, well, maybe we're past this, you know, maybe. And, yeah. you know, people are really good at concealing the hardest things, the things that hurt the most. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, how, you know, can you give us your personal experience, the gamut of emotions, like I said, and how maybe those right. two things were different experiencing the first time and the second time?
Yeah, yeah. So with my sister, I would say I had a period where with that, one, lack of sleep. Like I wasn't sleeping at night, and it was just that constant, like, replaying it, you know. And then I had a stint of like alcoholism where every night, because I already couldn't sleep, I was just drinking myself to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had like this immense amount of guilt that all the times that I didn't, you know, help her, or feeling guilty because I wasn't in a position to help her and I should have been, or I should have tried harder, or I should have sacrificed my well-being for her own well-being. And, you know, like, I think a lot of just guilt came first. And then, like, the acceptance, I feel, did come in stages. Like, okay, she's gone. Okay, she's gone. And then, like, you're like, okay. Like, in my head, and I know this is going to sound so stupid, but in my head, I was like, okay, people fake their deaths all the time, like 7 years, and then you're good. And so last year was the seventh year, and I knew she wasn't coming back, but I almost had like this, like I'd been holding my breath for 7 years,
mm-hmm.
and then it came, and I was like, okay, she's really not, you know? I did feel a lot of anger. I would say, you know, once I got past the alcoholic kind of trying to drown it out, I had a lot of anger towards her, you know, and not just towards her, but like my mom and my aunt and my grandma, because my aunt, my grandma were supposed to go pick her up, but my cousin got out of jail, the same cousin who had been in active addiction for years, proceeded to spend more years in addiction. And like, she wasn't doing anything in her life. She wasn't anything spectacular. Like, so they put off going to pick up my sister to go pick up this cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I blamed them so hard for it. And I was so angry, you know. And then, of course, I felt angry with my sister herself. And then, you know, the years came and it was like I calmed down a little bit and was able to, like, you know, put it more towards the back of my mind. But like clockwork, that, you know, the month of August and September would come, and it was literally like clockwork. I would just kind of like start to kind of mentally decline and get more depressed, and like lack of sleep. I'd you know, I couldn't eat. I was drinking more, and you know, my first full year in my career was the first time that I spent, and that was in 2021, that I'd spent her birthday and the anniversary of her death sober. And it almost felt like betrayal, because I wasn't drowning in the emotions. I was just like accepting it, you know? And I was like, is this it? Like, does this mean that I don't miss her anymore? Does this mean, you know, what does this mean? And it doesn't. It in no way does it mean that. It just, I was truly accepting it, you know?
Yeah.
Guilt comes with both. I think just as an older sibling, guilt came with both. But with my brother, I think I just expected it. And every now and again, I'll feel a little bit of anger, mostly because, like I said, he did it while on the phone with me. And I like, and it's not like anger that he did it. It's anger of like, what I always ask myself is, why would he do that to me? Like, why would he do that on the phone with me? You know?
Yeah.
And that, I think that's where my anger towards him starts and ends. But I still feel a lot of guilt because, you know, he was like throwing a fit because I wouldn't leave my two sisters. We were staying in a hotel in a strange town. Like, I'd lived in that town, but it was still like just a sketchy, it was the only hotel in the town, so it's like a sketchy ass motel.
Yeah.
And I was like, I told you, you know, before you got belligerent, to let me come pick you up, because once they're asleep and once I take my contacts out, like, I'm not driving. It's we're in backwoods but fuck nowhere. Like, I'm not driving, and I'm not leaving them here. And he was throwing a fit because I wouldn't go pick him up. And I was like, literally give me like till 5 a.m. That's when mom and, you know, our stepdad Micah would be waking up. I was like, and then I will come get you. Like, it's literally an hour's time. That's it. That's all I need. And I guess that hour was too much for him or something. There's a lot that I think went into that I, you know, I've come to really maybe ponder. But I think that because, so in the same month that he took his life in 2023, a couple weeks later, I called my doctor when they told me he was officially dead, like they pulled the plug on him. And I was like, I just need something to sedate me. I was like, I need to be sedated. Like, I don't think I'll be able to process this.
Mm-hmm.
And an ex-boyfriend, his mom, and then my husband, you know, they were like also concerned. They were like, this is it. She barely survived the first one. Like, they were all just constantly like watching me because they thought like I was next, you know? And I saw a photo that my husband took of me 5 days after my brother took his life. And you can literally just like see it on my face. Like, I had nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I can look at the picture on May 4th and the picture on May 10th, and like, it looks like all youth just left my face, you know? And I just look so dead and empty. And, you know, my husband, before we came home to Georgia, because this happened in Louisiana, before we came home to Georgia, he had his mom and stepdad go through the house and like clean out any medications, the guns, anything like that. He was like, I just don't know where she's, like, I don't know where she is mentally. She won't talk. She's not, you know. And it just seems like a blur. I think part of it was because of the sedating medications that I was on, and part of it was just like surreal shock. You know, it was just like I all life had left my body.
Did you feel like you were at risk?
I don't know how I felt.
Yeah.
I think I more was worried about my younger sisters. Like, they had been exhibiting behaviors that were, like, you know, like cutting and, you know, just suicidal ideation themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my head, I was more worried about them. But 2 weeks after, I had a pretty serious health scare where I was like, I'm just going to drink a couple beers and cry it out and then go through that. Well, what went from 4 beers turned into like a full bottle of whiskey. And so like the next day I was hospitalized and like it was just a whole thing. And I was like, okay, that was not okay.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, once I was like back to normal health and everything, I was like, okay, I've already seen what drinking myself, you know, near death looks like. I almost did it this time. And I was like, this is just not going to work. You know, this isn't going to work. And it was more of a compartmentalizing, you know. At the time, I was a firefighter. And I'd seen a lot of stuff at that point, you know. So I had learned how to compartmentalize. And I think I just had to look at it as another patient, another client, somebody else's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think it helped, but I had a lot of anger still. Like, and it wasn't towards him. It was like towards his grandmother and my mom and,
yeah,
you know, like a little bit of guilt. I say a little bit. I did have a lot of guilt for not going when he asked me to go pick him up. But I think I was just in shock. Like, I spent that better, you know, later part of that year just in shock.
Yeah.
So I'm finally to the point where there were times where just out of habit, I would be driving long distances and I'd, you know, on my car, like I would just tap his name to call him. And like, as it's ringing, that realization came and I was like, wait, like, yeah, that's not, you, yeah, know, he's not going to answer. But I'm in year 2. It's been 2 years and 5 months as of yesterday. And I can definitely tell that I'm like in those acceptance and like truly emotional stages of grief now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy process, you know, that takes so much time and different for everyone. So the, mm-hmm. has these experiences changed the way you like your relationship or the way you interact with your other siblings?
Somehow my mom has in her head, she's like flipped it to say like these are like I'm the bad influence, like I was the bad influence growing up because, mm-hmm, I struggled with suicidal ideation and for feeling those things. Couldn't possibly be that, you know, she told us we were stupid or worthless or we never be anything, or, you know, it couldn't possibly be that. It just had to be because I struggled with it. Yeah. You know? And so in September of 2023, my mom called my husband and like trash talked me, said, you know, this is all Selena's fault. And one of the girls tried to take their lives. And he was like, what the fuck is going on? You know? And he'd stepped outside. Well, he called her back, like said his piece to her and was like, Selena hasn't seen or spoken to them in months because of you, you know. And he was like, they're gonna grow up one day and you're gonna realize when you're alone this was all you.
Yeah.
Like, and so from that point she has not allowed me. I've gotten to see them once. It was like February of this year for my sister's quinceañera, but she has kept me away from them. And from what I understand, outside of that one suicide attempt, CPS was involved because of it, because, you know, they just kind of looked at the whole record of my mother's like history, and they were able to see where both my sister and I had attempted. My sister was successful, and then later my brother was successful, and then a fourth sister was, you know, attempted. So now she's like under a microscope, you know. Mm-hmm. And I do think that maybe they're better, and my family's more involved now. Like before, my family was just like, just Jessica's gonna do whatever Jessica does. But now I think they're like, you know, they're like, do we really want to like risk it, you know?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I don't get to have the relationship that I want with them. But I am hopeful that as they're getting older, you know, they know that I'm here and my door is always open. And, you know, my husband and I have already spoken about this. Like, if they ever come knocking or if they ever just call, like, they have a place here with us. But, like, my sister turned 17, the same age as my sister when she took her life. And it was, like, that whole time, like, my heart just was, like, you know, like, anxious. And then she'll be 18. She'll be 18 in March. And, like, that's the same age my brother was. And, like, I just have this, like...
Right, like feeling, you know, like borrowed time almost, you know?
Right, yeah. Because, like, the same sister that I'm talking about, she's the one that attempted in September of 23. And she made a joke the last time I saw her. She was like, in normal families, when we turn 18, they go to, or when they turn 18, they go to college, and our families would just kill ourselves. And I was like, that's morbidly, it's hilarious. I was like, but you understand that that's not,
yeah,
like, that's not,
we should normalize
doesn't have
that.
To be that way.
Yeah. Well,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, well, thank you for sharing all that. That's definitely like, it's, you know, crazy thing for anyone to go through. And, you know, for anyone listening, again, we just know that you can only do so much. And with some people, it's, you know, it's not, it's, unless you're actively encouraging someone, it's not your fault. You know, it's don't,
yeah.
You can't take that on, and it's hard not to at first. And even for a long time, but there's, you know, it's just things that, yeah, I mean, we, you know, you can't just stand next to someone all day, every day, and you can just do what you can while you're there. So, this is kind of a weird segue, but at what point during this did you, cause you were a firefighter, you were an EMT, at what point in this timeline did that happen?
In 2019, I applied, started doing training, got accepted into a fire academy in December of 2020. And then, I want to be very clear. I did not choose to leave being a firefighter. I had picked a big fight with the chief in my department. And he notoriously is just a bully. Well, this one piece of information made it back to him about, you know, my brother taking his life while on the phone with me, and suddenly he cared about the well-being of his firefighters, and he used this to keep me from returning to work until I saw their psychiatrist. I did some research, I got a lawyer involved, where was able to prove that this psychiatrist had forged results before, presented that to them. They, you know, they had me jumping through hoops. Finally, they gave in and were like, hey, you can go see your own therapist. We just need, you know, proof and clearing. And by that point, so much time had come. There was, like, delay. They were doing, like, they would call me when it was, like, immediate, like, hey, we need this, because this is all wrong. But it was, like, when they initiated getting things and approval of stuff, they would send it via letter. Well, I'm not just going to sit at home while I'm grieving and my husband's working 12-hour days. I'm not going to sit at home by myself. You know, it's like never home. So eventually they had like this interview thing I had to go to. And I went, I said my piece, and I was like, you guys can call me and tell me if I have a job, or you can call me and tell me, fuck you. I was like, either way, I'm fucking done entertaining this shit. Let me know. And I left, and I'll be honest, I don't actually know if I was let go. I don't know if they were just gonna let me come back to work. I just stopped reading it. I just fucked it, you know. And so I went and I joined another fire department for a little while, but they were just a glorified EMS service because that's all they did.
Yeah.
And I left them because I'm a firefighter. I'm not an EMS. Like I am an EMT, but EMS is not what I joined the field for. It was for firefighting. And so I left them in March of 2024 and I've kind of just been focusing on school since then.
Do you feel like that was that something you wanted to do previously, or do you feel like that path was like influenced by the need to want to help save other people?
So when I was in high school, I wanted to be a firefighter. Like I kind of knew that. My sister and I, the one that took her life, we had a plan. Like I'd be a firefighter for a few years and then she and I would join the Navy together and we would try and become Navy SEALs. Like that was just the plan.
Oh, okay.
After my sister took her life, I was like, I'm a pussy. I don't want to join the Navy by myself. Sure as fuck don't want to be a Navy SEAL alone. You know, like I was like, I'm not too proud to admit that.
Sure. I mean, it's not like you can just be like, you don't just get to show up. There's a lot involved. So, you know, it's like, it's not a thing that, you know, I mean, even if you do show up, a lot of people don't even make it. So you're not like, it's not like a, you know, crazy thing to think that like, maybe I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
What's involved?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but in 2019, before I started trying, the place that my sister went was like kind of this wooded area. And I saw these like fucking loser ass kids were out there like smoking weed and like leaving their buds and leaving alcohol, like empty, like, you know, alcohol bottles, like beer cans and bottles. And I was so pissed. I was like, tell your little fucking loser friends, this is not the place. Like, this is not respectful. This is actually super disrespectful. I was like, don't fucking do this shit again. Don't let me catch y'all. And like, I ended up calling the police. I was like, is there anything I can do? Like, can I buy this? Like, do you know? And the guy was like, hey man, I was the officer. I'm a paramedic. And he was also like a sheriff or something. He was like, I was the one that saw your sister and, you know, coordinated pulling her out, like extraction. He was like, my mom knows your mom, you know, they go to the same Mormon church. And he was like, just the way you talk, he was like, the way you present, he was like, have you ever considered like EMS? And I told him, no, you know, I used to want to be a firefighter. But in the area that I was in, you had to be 21. So my sister killed herself when I was 20. I still was too young to be a firefighter where I wanted to be a firefighter at. And he was like, well, listen, there's other departments that'll take you straight out of high school. And he was like, and you can be an EMT also straight out of high school. He's like, you should really consider it. And, you know, my life kind of had a little turning point there. I came to live, came to stay with my aunt and uncle here in Georgia and met a guy who was a firefighter. And I was like, man, this is like the second time in the same year that this has come up. And I was like, let me just try. And at that point, I think I was 22 or maybe 21 or 22. And I just, like, I succumbed to that, you know. And the department that I was in, you had to be an EMT minimum. So, you know, it just worked out. But definitely firefighting, like, I was always drawn to that. The EMS part just got thrown into it. And now that I'm not doing either, I definitely am still drawn to helping people. Like, I'm going to school. I'm pre-med technically. And I'd like to become like an emergency room physician.
Yeah.
Or maybe a, you know, physician's assistant, something that I can really, I don't just hand them over and that's it. You know, yeah. I definitely can see that the impact is larger now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, you got a plan, still helping people and doing, you know, doing what you want to do. So, Selena, I appreciate you sharing everything you did today. Thanks for being so open. And hopefully the, you know, conversations like this are helpful for people who either are going through stuff like this, either with, you know, thoughts of harming themselves or dealing with people who in their life who have, you know, it's a tough thing. So I assume if they want to hear more and, you know, conversations like this and how they can listen to Big Talk and Big Feelings. Can you tell people where they can find it and when and how?
Yeah. So, like Deese, I took a little week break. I'll be back at it this week, but I was posting every Sunday, but football season's coming around. So I'm trying to move it to Mondays. Mondays around 10 o'clock on YouTube. And then I have a week delay to upload on, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, just because I want the traffic to go to YouTube. I also have a Facebook page called Big Talks and Big Feelings. It's directly linked to my my own personal Facebook page, but you can find it. Just type in Big Talks and Big Feelings. It's purple, love the color purple, and I mean you'll know it's me. So yeah, just tune in whenever you can if you guys would like. Our next few episodes are going to be focused on suicide awareness, suicide stories. And then for the entire month of October and part of November, I will be focusing on grief and loss because Dia de los Muertos, I do celebrate it. And so it's just, I want to, you know, kind of bring that about, you know, for people. But yeah, other than that, you know, just tune in for my other great, great storytelling adventures.
All right, guys, check it out. Check out the podcast. Follow, listen, enjoy, share, tell people about it and all that good stuff. Selena, anything else before we get out of here today?
No, I just want to say thank you so much. You, I really enjoy the way that you, you know, ask questions and, you know, give time to really listen. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for, you know, like I said, being so open, taking the time to do it. So, guys, we are going to get out of here this week. We appreciate you hanging out. Join us next Wednesday. I'll be back next Wednesday. I'll give you an episode one way or the other. come check it out. Actually, oh my God. No, next episode is our 500th episode. So, we are going to do a thing. I still don't know what yet, but we're going to do a thing. It'll be something. I've been talking about this for a couple weeks. I'm trying to get the former producer, Jeremy, former producer Traz, former news anchor Sophie on the show. So, guys, hopefully, if you've been listening a long time, you know who all those people are. I'm going to try to get a show where we're all together and talking shit again. It will be the polar opposite of this show because we're just going to be talking shit. As opposed to talking real topics like today. We do everything on this show. So tune in next week. And guys, if topics like this are something of interest to you or something that affects you or you've been affected by, not to shamelessly plug this, but my comic book series, Kill Stan, I highly suggest you check it out. It's a story of a guy who wants to end his own life, so he decides to do it through vigilantism. Most of you who've been listening to this channel know the story or know about it, but you know, it's you know, kind of a neo-noir crime thriller on the surface, but really it's a character piece about one man's journey of loss, trauma, and the crazy things we think and do when we feel like we have nothing left to live for, and how those things can potentially lead us back to finding the light in our life. So, yeah, check it out. So we're going to get out of here. Selena, anything else before we go?
No.
All right.
No, that's it. Thank you so much, Deese.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate you being here. For Social Hour, I've been Deese. And for Selena, thank you very much, guys. And we will see you all next week. Mm-hmm.